Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 15, the Yoga of the Supreme Person, text number 5. Nirvana moha jita sangha dosha. Adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama. Dvandvaira vimukta sukha dukha sangara. Kachanya muda padam avyam tat. Ni, without. Mana, false prestige. Moha, an illusion. Jita, having conquered. Sangha, of association. Dosha, the faults. Adhyatma, in spiritual knowledge. Nitya, in eternity. Vinivritta, disassociated. Kama, from lust. Dvandvai, from the dualities. Vimukta, liberated. Sukha dukkha, happiness and distress. Samgyai, name, kachanti, attain, amuda, unbewildered, padam, situation, avyayam, eternal, tat, that. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are free from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who unbewildered know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. Please repeat. Those who are free from false prestige,
those who are free from false prestige,
illusion,
and false association,
who understand the eternal,
who are done with material lust,
who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress,
and who unbewildered
know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to the eternal kingdom. Purport. The surrendering process is described here very nicely. The first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride, because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself to be the lord of material nature. It is very difficult for him to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should know by the cultivation of real knowledge that he is not the lord of material nature. Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord. When one is free from delusion caused by pride, he can begin this process of surrender. For one who is always expecting some honor in this world, material world, it is not possible to surrender to the Supreme Person. Pride is due to illusion, for although one comes here, stays for a brief time, and then goes away, he has a foolish notion that he is the Lord of the world. He thus makes all things complicated, and he is always in trouble. The whole world moves under this impression. People are considering the land, this earth, to belong to the human society, and they have divided the land under the false impression that they are the proprietors. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of the world, of this world. When one is freed from such a false notion, he becomes free from all false associations caused by familial, social, and national affections. These faulty associations bind one to this material world. After this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what is actually not his own. And when one has an understanding of things as they are, he becomes free from all dual conceptions, such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain. He he becomes in full knowledge, and then it's possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So again, we have the same philosophy repeated in a slightly different way. And here Prabhupada is emphasizing the fact that if we want to become free from pride, false pride, which is caused by illusion, the first illusion is that we think we're the owners. And what we think we're the owners of, I guess basically it starts, we think we're the owners of this body. And since we think we're the owner of the body, therefore we think we're free to do with whatever with the body we think we want to, or whatever the mind and senses dictated that we do. And of course, as the saying goes, every parpa. You've heard that word before? You've heard the word? Papa. A person has no money is called a parpa. Penniless person. The saying is that every parpa is proud of his penny. Even someone has one penny, he's still proud of having the penny, because it's his penny. Everyone has something to be proud of. But since we're not the body, any pride that we have pertaining to the body is due to illusion. And generally speaking, everyone is proud of his possessions. Just like if you go on the street and someone's wearing a T-shirt, it says, you know, I love Donald Duck or something like that. Then they're proud of their T-shirt. They identify with it. Or maybe, probably more common, someone has a Spider-Man shirt on. He thinks he's a spider. He's part of the spider club. And they're proud of it. They actually identify with it. Or sometimes when people have, I don't know if they have punks around here. You know what a punk is? I'm not a skunk. I'm not a punk. I'm a monk. That was a Sankirtan line. We would ask them, do you know what a punk is? Do you know what a monk is? And they go, I think so. Well, I'm not a skunk. I'm not a punk, I'm a monk. So everyone is proud of something, and they have a T-shirt on, and you say, oh, wow, look at that T-shirt. And they go, yeah, it's me. Bow down, yes, sir. I recognize you. You're the head of the spider club. So in this material world, everything, just like people will find some reason to be proud of their false prestige. Like if you say, what country you're from? Everyone has some reason to be proud of their country. I'm from America. Yes, we're a big dog. Rawr. We bite everyone. I'm from Slovenia. Ooh, I'm a little dog. Don't bite me. I'm a nice dog. I don't bite anyone. I'm small but beautiful. So everyone finds some reason to be proud, because without being proud, it's very difficult to live in the material world. Because we're struggling just to survive here. So there must be some reason for being here. So we have our family, and every family, even if you have mice, and we have some mice here, I guess we have rats, but I guess if you call someone a rat, it's not very polite. If you call them a mice, it's kind of, it's a little bit more. So we can say we have some mice here. You say you're a rat. Arr, what are you calling me a rat for? You're a mice. Yes, I'm a mice. So the point is that as soon as we identify ourselves with this gross or this subtle body, then immediately we think we have so many things connected to it. I'm part of this country. I'm part of this species. The mice here, they probably have a family, probably a dynasty living here. How many people live in your temple? How many live in your temple? Someone asks, how many do they live? Well, we have hundreds living in the temple. We don't have to tell them what species of life live there. But we have hundreds. Really, you have hundreds? Yeah. We have a big family in our temple. And even the mice are proud of their family. Look at my wife. Look at her tail. Isn't it beautiful? Have you ever seen a tail like that? And here's my children. Wow, they eat a lot. They've eaten more maha than the devotees have here. So everyone has some reason to be proud. And that pride is all due to the fact that we think we're the proprietor of something, even of the body. Just like nowadays it's very popular to lift weights so that you can develop big muscles. So you have some pride. Look at me. Oh, yes. And if someone can play checkers better than anyone else, then they're considered to be a genius amongst checker players. So pride is due to illusion, because ultimately we're all dependent upon Krishna. Whatever knowledge we have, whatever remembrance we have, and whatever forgetfulness we have, it all comes from Krishna. We don't independently have any opulence other than what Krishna is providing us. It's all given to us on loan, and a very temporary loan. So, and because of that, because we identify ourselves with these gross and subtle bodies, we have so much false association. This is my family, this is my nation, these are my friends, these are my enemies. So this is all due to the fact we can't surrender to Krishna, because we're surrendered to Brahma, Bhuta, Prasanatma, Nishoshiti, Nakangshiti, Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu, Madhvaktim Lavate Param. That when one comes to the stage of Brahma Bhuta, when one realizes himself as a soul, then he doesn't hanker and lament. So in relation to this body, in relation to our gaining something, and why do we want to gain something? As it says here very simply, because if we have something, we won't get too cold in the winter. And if we gain some, if we lose it, then we might get cold. And if we get cold, we might die. This body might die. So we're very much attached to having enough opulence, so at least we can have some warmth during the winter. Just like if the temple went broke, and the temple started to see icicles on the altar, then we and the deities, we'd all move out of here. We'd go south for some more warmer climate. Because this duality of happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, is why we're attached and averse. If there was no heat and cold, there was no happiness and distress, there was no honor and dishonor, there'd be nothing to be attached to or aversed about. Isn't that right? If we were on a platform, we were always happy, then there would be nothing to be aversed about. And if everything made us happy, then what would we be averse to? If we weren't disturbed by the climate, there would be nothing to be aversed to or attached to. or honored as someone called us a name and we were happy about it. We didn't care, or we didn't care about it. There'd be no attachment or aversion. But because of our attachment or aversion, our attachment to be happy or avoid distress, or to be cold or warm, whatever, therefore those who help us get what we want, they're our friends. And those who take away or threaten what we have, they're our enemies. So we look at everyone, are you going to give me something or are you going to take it away from me? So today someone gives me something, they're my friend, but if tomorrow they take something away from me, then they automatically become my enemy. So the whole material world is based upon these dualities we experience through our body and the friendships and the enemies we create on that basis. And if one becomes free from those, if one comes to the spiritual platform, then that's called, well, we can actually surrender to Krishna. Because then our motivation is not due to what's going to make me happy or what's going to give me distress or what's going to make me warm rather than cold or cold rather than warm. Or one's going to honor me or dishonor me. If it's not, then we can actually follow Krishna's directions. Krishna says to Arjuna, fight and kill your relatives. He says, wait a second. These are my relatives. These are the ones who, you know, who protect me, who love me, who honor me. This is my clan. These are the ones who fill up my kingdom. These are my soldiers. How can I kill them? But Krishna said, no, I want you to go and fight. So when Arjuna got over this duality, what was going to make him happy or put him in distress, what was convenient or inconvenient, obviously it's usually not very convenient to fight on the battlefield, especially when you're fighting day and night and you don't get enough sleep. So you're on the battlefield, look at your clock and say, it's time to take rest. Excuse me, stop your fighting, I'm tired. It's very inconvenient to fight on a battlefield. And as far as happiness, you know, when you kill your grandfather, here, this is my appreciation for you. It's not very pleasant to kill your grandfather, to kill your teacher, to kill your relatives. But Krishna, Arjuna had to tolerate. So if one can tolerate these dualities, then one can fix his mind upon Krishna. Because it's due to these dualities that our mind goes away from Krishna. We get caught up in this illusion. And therefore, if we can't think of Krishna, how can we surrender to him? How can we suppose that we're doing our activities for him? We can't be doing our activities for him because we're too much caught up in trying to survive in the material world, avoid distress, obtain happiness, get heat during the winter and cold during the summer, getting some appreciation. If you want to sell a book on the street and say, excuse me, sir, you're the ugliest person I met today. We're passing this book out to all the ugly people on the street. You qualify. You probably won't get too many buyers. Yeah, this is what I identify. I'm really ugly. Yeah, this is my book. And you say, well, we're passing these out to all the beautiful people. Yeah, that's my book. That's for me. I'm one of those people. So people are looking for some appreciation. Unfortunately, either subtly or grossly, most people are just getting envious looks, disdain, anger, frustration. And therefore, what they want to get, they don't get. And what they don't want to get, that's what they're getting. But if someone can come along and give them something that they're looking for, then they immediately want it. Because that's what the material world is, especially nowadays. Just competing to try to figure out what people want, however gross or insignificant it might be, and try to give it to them so that one can control them and exploit them. So that's all the material world is about. If I'm cold, I promise to make you hot, and therefore I surrender to you, rather than to Krishna. But if one can become free from all these attachments and aversions, then one can actually think about what Krishna wants and execute that. And the result is that one will think about Krishna and get Krishna's reward for that. Otherwise, all the other rewards for happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, they're all insignificant. Just like no one here is jumping up and down because we're not cold in the temple. Is that right? We jump up and down because we're in ecstasy during kirtan. Not because it's cold or warm in the summer, you know, in the winter, or cold in the summer. So just, or we're happy one day, next day we're distressed, whatever. But this is how it works. No one is in the material world is perpetually happy. As soon as we're too happy, then we become careless. We do something to make ourselves unhappy. And when we're unhappy, we become a little humble. We start thinking about, why am I unhappy? And then we do something to make her to be a little bit more in the mode of goodness, and we become happy again. So we're constantly going up and down like a yo-yo. You know what a yo-yo is. So no one can stay either perpetually happy or perpetually distressed. And after whatever we're in, we get used to it. Even if you live on the street in Tivoli Park for some time, after a while you get used to it. If you get, this is the park with, this is a park where my favorite trees are, and every time I go there I feel quite comfortable. This is the part where the paintings are in the park, or where that building is, or whatever else. And one feels comfortable there. One identifies itself. I'm from Tivoli Park. Where are you from? So we get accustomed to being in our material situation. And when it gets a little bit better, we say we're in happiness. When a little bit of our desires are fulfilled, then we say we're feeling good. And if something's not going the way we want, then we can become bad. The next day it becomes better or worse, whatever. We just get used to something, and a little bit better than before is good, and a little bit worse is bad. So, if we're actually free from these dualities, we can actually listen and develop some spiritual knowledge, as it says here. We can actually accept, actually I'm eternal, that I have nothing to worry about, that all the problems going in the material world really don't affect me. I'm simply remaining aloof as a spirit soul, a spiritual platform. And therefore, in this form of life, in the next form of life, I'll be there. Luckily, I have the human form of life to understand that I'm eternal. But in any case, in every form of life, wherever I go to, I'm always going to be eternal. The question is, how am I going to spend my time? Whether I'm going to spend it in Krishna consciousness, or in some other trying to get happiness or distress from the material body, or trying to get hot when it's cold or cold when it's hot, trying to get some honor when I'm dishonored, or sometimes having to face dishonor even after I've been honored. And after I'm dishonored enough, then someone honors me. And then he becomes free from all dual conceptions. Then he becomes full of knowledge, and it's possible for him to follow Krishna's directions. So, of course, we take it for granted that somehow or another we're engaged in sadhana bhakti, and we wind up in the temple sometimes in the morning and in the evening, and we're doing things during the day, hopefully for Krishna. So we take it for granted. But actually, this is a big thing for people. They have no idea that they're eternal. They have no idea that they're just being battered around by happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, all the dualities of the material world, man and woman, cat and human and others. They're just being battered around by the dualities, life after life, not only in this lifetime. And therefore, when they hear about Krishna consciousness, the fact that their bodies are changing, but they're not changing, they can't even begin to understand what's being talked about. They have no idea what you're talking about. Yes, what do you mean my body's changing? Are you insulting me? You don't like my body, you're saying it's changing? And you're not changing. Of course I'm changing, because I'm this body. I've changed so much. I had a little baby body, and now I'm this body, and I'll always be this body forever and ever, although it may look different. I'm always going to be exactly the same, no matter what my body is. Well, that means you're a spirit soul. What are you talking about? There's no such thing as a soul. Next, you're going to tell me there's a God, and he's controlling everything. And it's not me. You're insulting me. You don't realize I've descended in this human form. You're mocking me. As they say in Bhagavad Gita, the fools deride at my descending in this human form. They don't know my transcendental nature and actually my supreme dominion over all that be. So the fact is that we're all here trying to compete with Krishna. We may say, well, I'm innocent. I'm not trying to take over the whole world. I'm just trying to take over part of it. The rest will come later because I'm patiently trying to take over. Today I have one house I bought. Tomorrow it's going to be two. Yesterday I had only one car, but now I have two. Yesterday I had three children, now I have four. So gradually I'm creating a dynasty to take over the universe. Gradually, step by step. So actually, even if we identify ourselves as a proprietor of, as Prabhupada said, a one raisin, then we're competing for Krishna for it, at least subtly. It's my raisin, Krishna. I do with it what I want. It's mine. It's mine. No, it's mine. Hands off the raisin. Offer it to me. No way. You might eat it. So as long as we don't identify ourselves as Krishna's eternal servant, actually identify it, then we'll think, well, yes, I'm Krishna's eternal servant sometimes. But then other times, this is my book, this is my body, this is my family, this is my nation, this is I and mine. And that means it's not Krishna's. And if it's not Krishna's, then we think, I'm the proprietor. And who, the only person who can be proprietor is God. So we think we're God. Of course, we think we're a nice God, but also Krishna isn't a nice person, too. You can have a nice God. Or sometimes we think we're not such a nice God, but at least I'm God. So this is called delusion. And if we can give up these things and tolerate happiness and stress, honor and dishonor, heat and cold, then we can actually follow Krishna's direction and acknowledge him as being the supreme, and then Krishna will gradually reveal himself to us. Because as long as we think we're supreme, Krishna doesn't want to disappoint us. He doesn't want to compete with us. He lets us stay in the illusion of being the supreme, and we can enjoy that. How as much we can thinking ourselves, how as much as we can enjoy being a material body, Krishna lets us do that with all the honor and dishonor that come from it. We get a sweatshirt during the marathon as a symbol of my dominion. And then we identify, yes, see, I'm a Maharati. I'm not an ordinary devotee. I conquer four directions. So somehow or another, you know, as long as we are in the material world, we're going to grab onto something in the material world to make ourselves feel important, that no one loves me, but I got this sweatshirt to prove that I'm a good person. Someone loves me. They gave me the sweatshirt. I'm not insignificant. I'm not 1/10,000th the size of the tip of hair in size. I'm at least the size of the sweatshirt. It fits me well. So as long as we want to be something more than 1/10,000th the size of the tip of hair in size, we're going to struggle in the material world to prove we're something more than we are. And then we'll suffer from illusion. But as soon as we can accept, I'm simply the insignificant servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, and then we can surrender to Krishna, then Krishna will come and protect us, and love us, and we'll love Krishna, and then we'll actually be happy and protected. Otherwise, we're going to have to struggle life after life. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna, should we, because you said that we should not struggle for a good position for ourselves, but should we struggle for a good position for Krishna's mission?
No, we shouldn't do it. We should just eat and sleep all day. Let Krishna take care of his mission. I'm hungry and tired. What else are we going to do? At the end of the day, when the Vaikuntha airplane is going to come and take us away, what are we going to write as our last words? I had a good life. I ate and slept very nicely. So, goodbye to everyone. I accomplished a lot. My body was always healthy and strong, and it ate and slept. And I'm dying, but I'm not dying like an ordinary person. I'm dying in a healthy body. No, the purpose why we're here is to become Krishna conscious. That's the advantage of having a human form of life. And if we work for Krishna's mission, that's the only way of becoming Krishna conscious. Otherwise, we'll just be wasting our time. Anything else? Kala, Granth Raj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.